Welcome to the CineScare Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And with us, as always, is the one and only assistant to the hosts. Not assistant host, but assistant to
assistant
the hosts.
To the hosts.
Yes. The super fan.
The bagger.
Mr. The bagger. Clean up an aisle three. Mr. Mark Piscati.
Hello, everybody. How's everybody doing out there?
They can't answer you, but no, I'm sure they're
right.
Doing fine. I'm sure they're doing fine.
I'm sure there's dozens of people shouting at their car stereos as we speak.
Fine, Mark. But actually, Mr. Mark Piscati, well, we have a big announcement. And
yes. Here is where we put in the sound effects for that, you know, like breaking news.
Oh yeah,
we actually have news.
Yeah,
we have breaking news.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Well, just see, now I don't have.
Yeah, kind of rude. Yeah,
Mark's is pretty good.
It's not bad. That's pretty good.
Mark's gonna put me out of a job.
No.
Or what about just like some piano playing? It's like. A flight of a bumblebee.
How about the Girl from Ipanema or some sort of like lounge music?
I like that.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
We've really built this up. I hope this
is going to be
earth-shattering news.
No, this is a big deal because
right
now, CineScare is producing a movie, Joe.
Yes.
And our point man on this, the guy who's been doing all the legwork to make this happen, is Mr. Mark Piscati. So, Mark, why don't you fill in our audience on what exactly is happening and how CineScare is involved?
Okay, yeah. So the CineScare podcast is now involved with Womp Stomp Films' Never Hike Alone 2, a Friday the 13th fan film. It's directed by the talented Vincent DeSanti. We thought together that we wanted to branch out a little, and so we invested in this upcoming film. So we are now officially associate producers of this film. And what happens with being associate producers? Well, that means when you watch this film, you're going to see our lovely logo designed by our one and only talented host, Mr. Joe Jans, in the opening credits. And we will also have the CineScare Horror Podcast title at the end of the credits. And with this investment, we're helping a gifted creator, Mr. DeSanti, and hopefully get our name out there for horror fans like you listeners to come check us out and listen to our podcast. And, you know, if you haven't seen Vincent's past films, I highly recommend it. They're fantastic films. We actually interviewed Vincent on episode 14. And but these films are called Never Hike Alone and Never Hike Alone in the Snow, and you can find and watch them on YouTube for free. So we just so that's what we've done. Pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And thank you, Mark, for doing all the legwork on this and making this happen for us. It's pretty exciting. Joe is already he's ready to call himself a producer now. He's like he's got the
kimono.
Yeah,
I have the smoking jacket, and the pipe, and I'm lounging poolside
smoking
with
jacket. I guess smoking jacket. But you don't wear a smoking jacket next to the pool. You wear a kimono next to the pool. I
don't know.
Right?
You've never really seen me in a kimono. It's not really.
I would love to.
Flattering.
Love
I'm to. Sure you would.
I would
yeah.
That would be okay. So amazing.
Yeah. Would
actually, what I...
Kimono and some Crocs.
What I need is a CineScare silk kimono.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe we could get that added to our Threadless store.
We should.
Oh,
we did.
And this wasn't a planned segue, but I would like to bring up our store.
Yeah.
I'm sure, like earlier in the podcast, we have had dozens of listeners that have been shaking their fist and yelling at their telephones or their car stereos whenever we would bring up the CineScare Horror Podcast merchandise store about ordering some of the materials we have out there.
Right.
We have been running into a technical issue for quite some time, making it damn near impossible for anybody to actually place an order. Well, I'm here to let everyone know we have fixed that issue. This is where we put the applause in.
Yay!
And
Sorry.
So anyway, the merchandise store is officially up and running seamlessly, perfectly. You can place orders. As a matter of fact, one of the friends of the show, Brian, he has already placed an order and received it, sent us a picture of him in his CineScare merchandise, and we greatly appreciate it, Brian.
He's like our guinea pig, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we appreciate a friend of the show, Brian. Shout out to friend of the show, Brian.
Brian.
Actually, this whole episode is about Brian.
It's dedicated to him.
But, you know, getting back to Never Hike Alone 2, we're going to post some we should post links on our Facebook stuff and all of our social media about his previous movies, which were Never Hike Alone, of course, was his first Friday the 13th fan film, and it's fantastic. It's I first heard about it from fans of Friday the 13th who just love it and share it and everything. And I'm sure if you're big fans of Friday the 13th, you've seen it. And then what was it? Never Hike Alone in the Snow. In the Snow, yeah. And that one was another
even better.
Even better.
Yeah, it was better
with snow. Yeah, I liked it. I loved it.
Yeah. I thought it was great.
And that's saying it because I really liked part one as well. And then now he's doing a sequel, Never Hike Alone 2. He's the only person, as far as I know, who has played, I mean, both Jason and Michael. So he played Michael in a fan film as well.
So this is Never Hike Alone 2, The Hikening? Still hiking?
Yeah. So, CineScare is very happy to be now producing movies. So very exciting.
We were too constricted in just one medium. Yeah. You know,
we wanted to branch
out. The podcast
out.
Thing, we were, you know, it's like a big bird in a little cage. We had to spread our wings, so.
Yeah.
But inevitability.
I'd like us to branch out in some other ways too. I have some ideas. We've talked about maybe doing a little bit more like articles and things like that, and maybe getting people who are writers to join us and write articles, reviews, and that sort of thing for our website.
There's, of course, is my burgeoning kimono modeling.
Well, that too. Yeah,
route that I'd like to get into. Yeah,
I could see you with your own OnlyFans, Joe, and you modeling kimonos.
Yeah, with some white socks with sandals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
little wooden sandals.
Like, eating barbecue or whatever in your kimono. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
All right.
All of this could be yours.
For $15 a month.
Yep.
Joe Jams in a kimono.
I think for me, though, it'd be OnlyFan, just singular.
You're a handsome guy, Joe.
Joe, you are.
Thank you.
Devilishly handsome.
Hey there, good looking.
Let's get to talking about what we watched. I'll start us off this week, what we watched, because I really didn't watch much. It was a very busy week, and so I didn't, or 2 weeks, so I didn't really get a chance to watch too much, but I did check out... not much. I did see Titanic 666 based on Joe's recommendation.
Oh, Joe.
Oh, we can all talk about this one.
I'll save that for you because I think you could probably give a better description than me, but that was brutal. And it's on, and it's a Tubi original.
It's a Tubi original. That's the best part.
I love Tubi.
Tubi is like the little train that could.
They threw like hundreds of dollars into this production. Good for them.
Easily. They spared lots of expense. So I'll save that to you. But I will say, whew, that was something else. It's not horror, but the director is a horror director. So I'll just mention I saw The Northman and I really did love it.
Loved it too.
It's obviously a step away from horror for Eggers. His first two movies were horror. And this one isn't. It's more like, I guess, you know, I don't know.
Vikings.
Classic Vikings. It's a Viking movie. But he's one of my favorite directors out there right now. And I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
He doesn't miss. He does not miss.
But I did watch his first short film that he did in college. It was, I believe, in film school. It was a film school's film. And It was Hansel and Gretel, which is very obviously a student film. It looks like a student film. It plays like a student film, you know, but it is pretty good. It doesn't really let you see the talent that's there, but it's interesting to see. It's only about 26 minutes long, I think, and it is silent film in black and white as well. So it doesn't look great on, I don't think the, what, however they uploaded it onto YouTube, it looks a bit grainy and not in a way that, you know, it not in the way that you would expect a short or a silent film from the 20s to look grainy. I mean, it looks grainy in a digital way, like the copy they had that they uploaded wasn't a great copy. And from what I've heard in an interview, he's very embarrassed that it's out there right now because it was just a student film. But it's interesting to see what, you know, even the great directors of the day, they start out somewhere. They don't all have like Spielbergian, you know, talent out the gate. They have to learn somewhere. So it was interesting, and I enjoyed it. It's only 26 minutes long, so you might want to check that out. He's got another short that he did that is supposed to be released. He said he is going to release that one, but it hasn't been released yet. So,
what's the name of that one? Do you know?
I don't remember what the name of it was. It might have been a short of Nosferatu, but I don't recall now.
Cool.
And that's... Oh, the only other thing I want to talk about is a new TV show, horror TV show, that's on HBO Max called The Baby. That just came out, was just released this weekend, and it's pretty interesting. It's about, I believe it's going to be like a devil baby. The show starts out with this woman running from the police, and it's set in England, and it's she's running from the police, and she comes upon like a cliff over like a beach and the ocean. Over someplace in England, and the police chase her there, and she winds up falling off the cliff, and the baby, she had put the baby down, and the baby starts crawling over to the edge of the cliff and falls off the cliff too. Cut to another character who's actually staying in a cabin at the bottom of that cliff. She just happens to come outside and sees the woman fall down and crash right in front of her. And then she looks up and sees the baby coming down and catches it. And this baby sort of attaches itself to her, and it starts doing things. It makes things happen to people. And so it the first episode, each episode, it looks like is only like 30 minutes long, so it's very easy, but it's sort of horror comedy. I think kind of a more of a dark horror, dark comedy, I guess, but it's pretty interesting. I'm definitely going to check it out, so it might be worth seeing. Of course, there's only one episode out, so I really can't say too much more about it, but I think it's definitely worth giving it a shot. So Joe, what did you watch that was non-theme related?
Oh, I had a couple gems on my list this week. First one would have been Choose or Die, which is new to Netflix with Asa Butterfield. Did either of you guys watch this?
No. No, you. I was going to watch it because it was in the top 10 for Netflix, and you saw it before me, and obviously, I dodged a bullet.
What was it called again?
Choose or Die.
Choose or Die.
Choose or Die, yeah.
Yeah, this Asa Butterfield is a like self-taught computer programmer, but he's very nostalgic, and he likes finding and rooting through old video games from back in the Computer Basic era, and he finds this game called Cursor that he starts playing. He's not actually the lead character. There's a girl that's the lead in there who I gotta say was really, really uninteresting. And I kept wondering the whole movie, why does Asa Butterfield taking a backseat to this girl? But the game that's being played called Cursor, it basically gives you a curse. I mean, you have to, as the movie states, choose or die. Like, the girl is in a restaurant. There's a waitress waiting on her, and her choices are, you know, do you want to have a cup of coffee or have a piece of cake? And, you know, she has to make a decision, and this decision impacts reality. And then it's, you know, should I break glasses or should I clean up? And the waitress, you know, she said breaks glasses, and the waitress is just dropping glasses in the restaurant nonstop. And then she decides to choose to clean it up. And the waitress bends down and starts picking up the shards of broken glass and putting them in her mouth to clean them up. And it's things like that. But as somebody that grew up with these, you know, old school basic computer programming things, a lot of the things they're trying to base this old technology on are just not true. I realize this is just a fantasy horror film, but I got really bored. It was basically what I didn't care for the most was the lead character, the girl in this. She's just not likable, and I lost interest. I was hoping that those 80s nostalgia, old school, single color, 8-bit video games would have held my interest, but it fell short. That's just my opinion. But it is a new release on Netflix, and again, that's called Choose or Die. The next one... Did either of you guys watch Virus 32?
No.
No.
Okay. Newly released film, and this one, I believe, was on either Netflix or Shudder. I can't remember which.
I believe Shudder, you said.
Yeah, I think it's on Shudder.
Okay,
yeah.
Virus 32 on Shudder. Good film. I like this one. There is some sort of virus, and again, this is like every zombie trope. There's... you know, some sort of breakout, and they don't give you any sort of real explanation as to what had happened. But there's a woman that had, she's a mother. She works as a security guard in like what I would consider to be like an old YMCA. So she's sort of locked herself into this place, and she brings her daughter to work for some odd reason. And meanwhile, outside, all around her, there is this breakout of some sort of zombie type virus. However, it is not turning people into zombies. It is making them commit horrible, horrible fits of rage and murder and whatever. So, like an angry virus. After observing these infected people and what they're doing, she realizes that the minute they, let's say, commit a murder or pummel somebody into an oblivion, they all seem to wait for 32 seconds afterwards to sort of recharge their batteries before they can even move. It's like the act that they're going through sort of exhausts them, and they all coincidentally take 32 seconds before they can get up and do it again. And so that information, of course, she uses that when these creatures start coming in to try to get her and her daughter, and she uses that to help escape. I can't really tell you any more than that, but I do recommend this film. It was a nice, refreshing new take on the whole zombie industry, which has been played to death. So it held my interest. It was very entertaining, and I recommend it. So again, that's Virus 32 on Shudder.
Yeah. What else?
Now the other two. Mark can at least chime in. So, Mark and I watched Veronica.
Wait. Let me get my notes.
Okay. Yeah, I got my notes. I will say that I started watching Veronica, and I turned it off. I couldn't.
Shame on you, Matt.
This is, of course. Well, go ahead, Mark.
So,
or whoever is going to explain it.
I'll start off, and I'll hand it off to Mark. So, for those of you who don't know, there's a gentleman by the name of Glenn Danzig, who at one time used to be the lead singer of a punk band called The Misfits in the early 80s, which I was a fan of. He then, later on, because of his ego, decided to move on and form his own band called Danzig. Now, he has set his sights on movies and created this movie back in 2019 called Veronica, which is a combination of erotica and violence. That's how he came up with the name. He's a true visionary. That's all I got to say.
He's
you know, of the two words melded together, violence got the short end of the stick on that, because really the word is really erotica with a V at the
beginning.
It wasn't really a good combination.
Hey, nobody puts Danzig in a corner. So just right. let them have yeah. it. So this movie is like a little anthology of like three little vignette stories. And
it's like Creepshow.
Yeah, exactly. Or Trick or Treat, that type of thing. Yeah. So, and of course, it's all wrapped up in a big narrated story, which...
Okay, I'm sorry. Comparing this to Trick or Treat.
or Creepshow. Yeah.
Or Creepshow is a bit of a stretch.
Well,
it's an anthology.
It is an anthology film. There's no other way you can describe it.
Yeah.
But it's not like those others.
You have like... a narrator, this woman that pops up before each show,
or
each short.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wonderful film.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Or what was the Tales from the Dark Side? There's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a great comparison.
Yeah, those are all anthologies. Then there's Veronica.
So what separates Veronica apart from all the other anthologies? It's only one thing. All right, two things.
I don't know that it's one or two things.
So one thing that comes to mind is all of the actors, this is not their day job. Their real day job is they're all porn stars. But for this film, they're actors. And boy, can they act.
Oh, boy.
And then, of course, the second thing that separates this from all other anthologies is the complete lack of a script.
Yes.
Or editing or direction.
Special effects, lighting.
Or...
costuming.
The
talent.
It's the only movie I've ever seen that made nudity seem boring.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about the first one real quick.
I would get less bored watching porn than I did watching Veronica.
Matt, you said you only watched 10 minutes, but the first short is called The Spider, I believe.
Wonderful costume.
He looked. It was like a white version of Gore or Goro from Mortal Kombat, kind of with the arms.
He looked have you ever made have you ever breaded chicken or fish? And
you put it in the egg and then in the flour and everything.
And when you're done doing that about 50 times, what's left in the pan that you're not going to bread anymore? That's what that costume looked like.
Matt, did he get to the cafe scene or the coffee house scene?
No.
Okay, so she
I got
comes
into
in...
the next scene, and then I said, "This is I don't have time for this."
Well, the main character in the first film or short, she goes into this cafe or coffee house and she sits down and a waiter comes in with a pot of coffee and says, "Madame, we're about to close. Would you like a refill?" She hasn't even ordered a coffee. Okay? She hasn't even ordered a coffee. Then she gets up and leaves, but not before she pays for the coffee that she didn't even order. That's the lack of script and just the lack of awareness is going on in this film.
I would also like to point out that Mark's French accent you just heard is 1,000 times more authentic than any of the actors in the movie.
the main character in the short, she has no emotion in her face because she can't move. She has no facial expressions because it's all plastic in her face. It's plastic surgery. And with her saying, "No," she says it like twice, and it's some of the worst no's, screaming no's I've ever heard in my whole entire life. Then there's a scene where it's like the next scene.
Is she the actress with the big puffy face?
Yes.
The pink hair. With the breasts, with nipples as eyes.
Eyeballs.
Oh,
yeah.
That are pasties.
Yeah.
That are pasties.
That blink.
That blink. And then she goes, the next thing, she goes home, she picks up the phone, and she doesn't dial or anything. She just puts it to her ear, and obviously she's calling the cops. She's going, "Come to my house." Then hangs up. Well, the cops don't know where she lives. She didn't get the address or anything. So it's like, how the hell are the cops even going to find a place? I don't know why this guy dancing. I never heard any of this guy's songs, but this guy,
I'll put some in underneath your talking.
Yeah, do it. And then the second one is called The Change of Face, and it's basically Mike Barnes, who plays the sergeant, the bald-headed guy. That's Mike Barnes from The Karate Kid Part 3. Hell yes. So I was excited about that, but that was some of the worst acting I've ever seen. He was on Bold and Beautiful and General Hospital. His acting is horrendous in this.
If he was in Karate Kid Part 3, Bold and the Beautiful, and General Hospital, how could he be a bad actor?
Oh, he was great as Mike Barnes. He was a good villain. And he's going to be in the next Cobra Kai. I know he will. Season. And then the third one, sorry to take over this one, but the third one is called like Drunk Ja or something. And it's basically a countess who kills girls and bathes in their blood. Then she kills another girl and then bathes in their blood. And then there's a little nudity, but then she kills a girl and then bathes in her blood. And then she kills a girl and then bathes in her blood. And it's like goes on for like a half hour and then it just ends. The third one's the worst. The first one is the best one out of all of them, in my opinion. And they got 5-minute montage in the second short of just stripping. There's like 2 5-minute like montage. I mean, this movie is got to be one of the worst horror films ever made.
I wouldn't say that. I would say this is one of the worst films ever made. I wouldn't pinpoint just the horror genre. This is just terrible.
It's so bad.
I'm so glad I didn't go on to watch
this. And
I
really hope that all of our listeners find this movie and watch it. And
you
and
should,
write
though.
It's just...
You should watch it.
Do not.
Yeah,
yes. No, you should.
It's so funny. It's so unbelievably terrible.
It isn't even funny. It's just so...
Sad?
Awful. Like
the
like,
entire cast is dead inside.
I mean, this makes Drive-In Massacre... seem like
Academy
the
Award
Godfather.
Winning.
Yeah, it's like The Godfather.
Yeah.
No. It's horrible.
So thanks, Joe.
So and then of course
Titanic 666.
We move on to our next film that I watched.
What kind of mood were you in this week, Joe? Because the horrible movies were coming
out
of your butt.
I don't make them. I just watch them. So I'm always.
Why was I following Joe all these 2 weeks going, all right, looks like I'm watching what Joe's watching.
I am just always on the lookout for any new horror films in 2022, so that way I'm prepared at the end of the year when we do our year-end wrap-up.
What made you think, when you saw the title, Titanic 666, that this was going to be a good film?
Well, I figured if Tubi can make their own content, the least I can do is watch it.
Oh, I love Tubi.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, well, I figure if Tubi did it, it's got to be good.
Yeah, if it's on Tubi, it must be a classic. Yeah,
must be classic.
So to summarize Jesus. Titanic 666. And
you could do this literally in 2 sentences.
Yeah, so
I got notes.
I
don't think we're
going to
waste time
notes.
On notes. But anyway, the main point of this is they've built the Titanic 3. And they're trying to get all these people to take a ride. They're going to ride through float through the old route of the original Titanic. And of course, when they go over where the old Titanic had crashed into an iceberg, sorry, spoilers, then the ship starts to get haunted by ghosts and, you know, chaos ensues. So it's already, we've already spent way too much time on it.
But why was it called Titanic 3?
Because there was another movie called Titanic 2.
That I watched.
That Mark watched.
That I watched.
But it's not a horror film.
It's not a horror film.
Yeah, so that's your trilogy, your Titanic 1, 2, and 666.
Yeah, so they decided to just make the third one into a horror movie. They're like, you know what, screw it, let's just make it a horror movie.
And
I don't know
why
they didn't
call it Titanic 3.
And
I don't know why they thought that Titanic 2 was going to be something anybody would want to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bruce Davidson's in it.
And just so you're aware, you do not have to have seen Titanic 1 for Titanic 666 to make any sense. You'll figure it out.
Really,
we have smart
you don't
listeners.
Have to have seen the beginning of Titanic 666 to watch the end of Titanic 666.
No. So, thank you, Tubi, for putting out some original content for your...
Yeah, you know what? I am proud of
it. I got my money's worth from, you know, how much Tubi costs.
Yeah.
You get what you pay
turn
for.
Those, I can't believe you took notes on that freaking movie, Joe.
I did.
Mark.
Oh, my God.
I did.
Anybody see a good movie this week, please?
I did. Virus 32.
Okay, yeah.
He's on Vampire's 32.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
Not for me. I'm all done. But Mark, we haven't hit Mark yet.
I watched everything Joe basically watched except those two films. But I did watch one. I watched Maniac from 1980. And because I had always seen this movie in the horror aisles since I was a kid. And, you know, the cover art was spectacular. The cover was super simple, just of a man's leg and jeans holding a big knife in one hand. And on the other hand, it was holding basically a head.
Head, yeah.
It was a head, a woman's head. And but all you saw was the hair, and then it was a pool of blood on the floor, and it was a drawn picture, and it was just spectacular. And a lot of the 70s and 80s cover art for horror was like painted, like drawn, and they're just gorgeous covers.
Yeah.
And so I always saw it, and I saw it on Wonderful Tubi, and I was like, oh, I'll take a gamble on it. And so it's about a guy named Frank Zito, who is absolute head case. He, you know, he hears voices in his head, and he sees horrific visions. And in his apartment, he has female mannequins that are bald. And every night, he basically goes out and mostly kills women and scalps them and brings them back to his apartment and hammers nails in the scalp and into the mannequin's head. That's basically what the film is about. It's the actor who played this Frank Zito guy is called Joe Spallini, and I recognized him. I was like, where have I seen him before? So I looked it up, and he was in The Godfather. He had a small speaking role in it, and he's been in some other films. But
he's in Godfather Part Two as well. Oh, he played. I can't go ahead. I can't remember who he played in The Godfather now, though.
Yeah, I think he was like a thug or something. I forgot.
I think he played Sollozzo.
Sollozzo?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. There's some really decent shots in this film, especially with this one model in her apartment where she's drawing a bath. She's walking down the hallway. Some of the camera angles are really good and good shots. And the director is William Lustig, and he also directed Maniac Cop, I believe. I'm not positive or not sure on that, but I do believe he directed Maniac Cop. That I haven't seen either. But there was some talent in it. And the acting wasn't too bad. At the end, Tom Savini is in this film, and he also did all the kills for this. And some are really great. Actually, Tom Savini was in the film. He plays the boyfriend with his girlfriend, and they're trying to get it on in the car, and the maniac guy basically has a shotgun and jumps up on the hood and fires a shotgun right through the windshield and blows up Tom Savini's head. And it's an incredible shot. I mean, we're talking fantastic explosion. Like, Tom Savini was, like, on point. And he's like, hey, if I'm going to get killed in this movie, it's going to be the best. And it was the best in that film. But it's not a bad film. I would recommend it if you want to get a little nostalgic with the 80s.
Oh, he does. Yeah, he doesn't play. He plays Willie Cheechy in The Godfather. He's mostly in The Godfather Part Two, but he plays the guy who he kills one of the five families' bosses. The guy in The Godfather, in the original The Godfather, during the baptism scene, when the guy is going through the circular door, he blocks it and shoots him. That's that guy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Good, Matt. Nice.
And then he's in Part Two as like Michael's bodyguard or something like that.
Yeah. Joe Spallini, he's got such a character's face. It's very striking. It's not the most attractive guy, but he's got a character's face where he passed away, I believe, in 1989, and kind of mysteriously, actually.
Yeah, it's Joe Spinell.
Spinell. Yeah, so, but yeah, Maniac, if you want to get a little nostalgia, if you like 80s horror films, definitely give it a look.
Yeah, that's one that's been on my list. I got it. Thank you for bringing it up because I want to see that one for sure.
It's interesting. it's not too bad. And that's all I've seen. I was all on right. The Joe train.
Boop, boop.
Well, this week we have our main theme is one that was brought up because Mark, our assistant to the hosts, he put us through the torture of having to watch the Lost Boys trilogy. Not so much the first one, but the second two caused Joe and I so much pain that we said, you know what, all of these quarries that we've had to sit through the last couple of weeks, we are going to punish you. So we allowed
put him
his
in a timeout.
Buddy. Yeah. His buddy,
in a corner.
Friend of the show, Brian.
Brian.
What was Brian's last name?
Oh, I can't even pronounce it. Nabagowski, Nakosti. I don't know, man. It's like
it's your buddy.
I know, but it's like 38 like
sounds,
letters.
Sounds like a good Irish Catholic name.
Oh my gosh, Nabowski. Oh God, Brian
Lebowski.
Yeah, Lebowski. Brian Lebowski. Yeah,
he really,
all right.
He really ties the room together.
He's a good buddy of mine. We used to be gaming all the time.
If you look on the CineScare group, you will see that he posted a picture of him wearing one of our CineScare t-shirts. Property of CineScare, I believe, is the one that he bought. And so anyway, it was his choice. We gave him the choice instead of Mark. And he said he wanted us to do the films of Mr. Rob Zombie. And Joe, I don't know, maybe you could do some little Rob Zombie music or something in here, you know, dancing.
I'm still thinking Girl from Ipanema.
Yeah. So, yeah, Rob Zombie. That is our thing. So let's just start off.
Thanks,
do we want to do it in chronological order or do the trilogy first and then do 31 and Lords of Salem after that?
Let's do the trilogy first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first, of course, of what they're calling, I guess people call it the Firefly trilogy because it's the name of the family, is House of 1,000 Corpses, which came out in
2003.
Wow. For some reason, I always think of this as like a 90s movie, but no, yeah, it was 2003. And it stars, it actually quite a cast, right?
Cast of thousands.
Chris Hardwick
is in it. It's got
the guy from The Office. What's his name?
Rainn Wilson.
Sid Haig
is in it, of course. You know, one of the things I like about Rob Zombie is that he really doesn't care. Like, he's kind of like the honey badger of filmmakers. He's going to do whatever he wants to do. And no matter what people say, if people complain about all the hillbillies, he packs it even more with hillbillies. If they complains about, you know, his wife being in the movie, he like casts her even more in
a
movie.
I'll show you
every single film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people give him a lot of hell about casting his wife.
It's funny that you mentioned those two complaints because both of those are mine.
Yeah. And
yeah, but she's really hot, Joe. She's really hot.
I don't know.
You don't think so?
I mean, I thought she was very attractive, but it's not like I thought, well, she's so hot, she has to be cast all the time. But he put his wife, you know, it's his choice. He puts his wife in. That's what he decides to do. She's playing Lily Munster. But I will say I liked her in Lords of Salem. I think she's better when she doesn't have to be so broad. But in House of 1,000 Corpses and this trilogy, she definitely has to be broad and big. But I don't know. I guess I'll – does anybody have a rundown of House of 1,000 Corpses they want to do, or I can just summarize?
It starts off – basically, Rob Zombie must have watched Dusk Till Dawn and said, hey, I want to do something like that. Seems like he's a fan of Tarantino. I mean, I guess who isn't? But there's a Tarantino robbery scene where two hillbillies come into Captain Spaulding's gas station and fried chicken place and holds up the place. And there's a lot of, you know, F-bombs, fuck you, fuck your mother, and, you know, flicking off. And so him and one of his associates blow their brains out. And then the movie starts, and then it starts with these two couples driving in the backwoods of Texas. They're writing a journal, I believe, or a book about off-road side attractions.
Yeah, weird little like highway side show attractions.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and so they pull into Captain Spaulding's gas station.
And I believe it's set in the 70s, right?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's in the 70s. So they pull in, and they're looking around the shop. It's got a lot of horror memorabilia. Then they have this, like, a little coaster ride. Not like a roller coaster, but this little, like, coaster on tracks where you can go into this, like, little ride, and it basically, it's like a haunted house, and they're going through there, and they find out about what was his name, Dr. Satan, and they say, oh yeah, yeah, you know, Dr. Satan. So Captain Spaulding, who's a clown, he's got like clown makeup on, sends them on their way to find a tree where he's buried or something, and then they run into a hitchhiker, Sherry Moon Zombie, who's called Baby, and the tires shot out, and so they're basically, they end up at Baby's house, and it's kind of like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre house where, you know, dolls are like on the house, like nailed to the wall, and then chaos just ensues, and they're tortured. One's turned into a half like mermaid man, the office guy, and then one's like sculpt, but yeah, just chaos ensues. And basically, I enjoyed the first half of this. It's the second half I had a problem with, because it just goes off the rails. It's kind of like an Alice in Wonderland, like fairy tale that just goes absolutely wrong. Like if you took acid.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of the house, it's ahead, the Jeff. Same house they used in Best Little Horror House in Texas with Dolly Parton.
Oh.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that.
Nice.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah. Joe, what did you think of House of a Thousand?
I'm glad Mark brought up the Quentin Tarantino From Dusk Till Dawn and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Because this movie, if you have not seen it, this is what I would envision if I found a fourth grade boy and told him to watch those two movies and gave him a whole mess of cocaine and said, now write a new movie and don't forget to add in every swear word that, you know, this is what you would have gotten. And yeah. I'm not a fan of it. I think it was a poor first showing for his first movie. And it really just seems like direct ripoffs of, From Dusk Till Dawn, and more importantly, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There's a couple scenes where he was trying to push the envelope and get a little bit hillbilly creepy. I think that whole scene where she's dressed up like a doll and doing the Betty Boop song, you know, when she's performing for the four teenagers. I think that was creepy. A lot of it's really hitting you over the head. It's really basic, really in your face. There's no tension. There's no suspense. I expected more out of the mood music or score from somebody like Rob Zombie, at least in this first film. But, you know, it is what it is. It's one of those things. I've seen it, you know, okay, now we're moving on.
Yeah, I actually saw that movie in the movie theater with my brother, and I remember walking out of it going, I think I liked it. It was really different, but I was kind of like, what the hell did I just watch? I didn't mind it.
It's its own thing.
I don't think it's a bad film. I just I I kind of appreciated Rob Zombie just actually directing a film, and it didn't, it wasn't shit like Veronica. I mean, it was actually, it did have a storyline. And I did notice back in 2003, I was going, he's got some talent. He just needs a little direction.
Yeah, I think he's got visual talent, like as a filmmaker, you know, and he's definitely influenced by 70s films. He's definitely like Last House on the Left as well, and The Hills Have Eyes. He's definitely into those kinds of films where the violence and brutality is just in your face. But he does, yeah, I agree that he doesn't always know how to set up suspense very well. And it's almost like just somebody doing something brutal is all there is to it, and his scripts are just, the dialogue is just not great. And you know, that I liked this movie, and then it, you know, because I've watched it a few times, and every time I get kind of caught up in it, like, oh, maybe it's not as bad as I thought, but then it just loses something about at maybe the almost some place after the halfway mark. And once they get into the house and everything, it should be more interesting then. And it kind of dies a little bit there. After the dinner scene, the whole dance number and where they're in the little mini theater and all that, it should have set up more tension there. It should have been more, you know, the stakes should have been driven up. I don't think we get into this as much in, I think we needed to like the killers a little more and dislike the kids more, or vice versa, one or the other, you know, but it was like, there was nobody particularly likable, but that's sort of a common thread in all of his movies. There aren't really very many characters that are all that likable, or people you really, you know, to me anyway, I know he's very popular, among a lot of people online, they, you know, he does definitely has a following, but I just don't see like how they're like that, all that likable.
I think the dialogue is my first issue with it. The script itself, well, not even the script, the script is what it is, but it's the dialogue. It's the delivery of the lines by the hillbilly family for the Firefly thing. Oh, by the way, I do appreciate one thing. The reason they're called Firefly is because the characters are named after Rufus T. Firefly, and all of the characters throughout this story are named after Groucho Marx character names. So if you go through, I was a big fan of some old Groucho Marx films or Marx Brothers films, and I started recognizing some of these names. And then they even mention it in, I think, the second film.
Yeah.
And
I think Devil's Rejects we talk about.
So,
it, maybe.
So I've always liked the Rufus T. Firefly name. And so that I did appreciate, but whenever the killers are talking, whatever they just said is hilarious to them. And every single time they're done with a sentence, they're giggling or laughing like they just heard the world's funniest joke. And it just starts to get so laborious listening to it over and over again.
Yeah, it's supposed to be comedy, but there's no wit. There's
it's not
no
funny.
Wit.
Yeah.
It's just not, there's not a lot that, you know, unless you just really find, you know, somebody just cursing funny. That's all his lines are, is just the, you know, F-bombs here and there. But there's got to be more to the line than that. You know, Goodfellas is full of F-bombs too, but there's also something else in those lines and in the dialogue that is, you know, it's more substantial than just F-bombs. But his is just, you know, and then when they tell a story, you know, about somebody fucking a chicken or something like that, like it doesn't come off funny unless you just find that funny to hear somebody say something like that, you know, and that's all.
Yeah, it's like Rob Zombie's trying to write like Tarantino, and he doesn't have the writing skills to do it. But he thinks that this is what would be funny, or like weird dialogue that is like his niche. I think he really thinks or wants to be like has a Tarantino niche to it.
I just want to get a quick disclaimer in there. just before Brian jerks the wheel of the car that he's driving into a bridge, I want to let him know that there are movies out of these five that I did enjoy. So I don't want him to think like, oh my God, they hated the movies. We'll get to him.
I do actually like this movie, and it's probably my second favorite of his. I think
Titanic,
right?
666, but it's okay.
No, nothing.
It's not a Tubi original.
I should thank you, Joe, because Veronica and Titanic 666 actually made me feel like, oh, maybe Rob Zombie's not that bad. You know, I wish I'd seen them before I watched this.
Right.
But I think my biggest issue with the House of Thousand Corpses, because I actually liked the film, especially the first half. I think my biggest problem with Shira Moon Zombie when she's just laughing, that high-pitched heckle.
Yeah.
It's constant, and I'm just like, shut up. Please shut up.
That's why, you know, I really liked her in Lords of Salem, and I wish I wish he would cast her in more roles like that, because I think she was pretty good in that.
Yeah.
But this character, she's not right for this character. This takes somebody who's just, I don't know, like just a better actor, I guess, But I thought, you know, I like Rainn Wilson in it. Of course, he's not in it that much, but I thought he was pretty good. And Chris Hardwick was good, and the girls in this were good. And I liked a lot about this. I just felt like I think he has a problem with endings. And this one, I don't think he knew where to go with it. And so he has ideas for really, you know, kind of effed up scenes in his mind and stuff that will be, you know, really violent and brutal and stuff like that, but then doesn't know how to set them up well. But anyway, I do like this movie. Don't love it, but I do like it.
Same here.
So part two was The Devil's Rejects.
Yeah. 2005.
This one is, of course, picks up directly. It picks up the next day, I think, right? Because the cops are about to break into the house, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it picks up the next day after House of a Thousand Corpses. And so the cops surround the place, and they all escape except for the mom, who in the first movie, the mom was played by Karen,
and one of the brothers got shot and killed.
The tow truck driver brother. Right, that's right, yeah. But he was kind of a nothing character anyway. But the mom was played in House of a Thousand Corpses by Karen Black, and in part two was played, I can't remember who the actress was who played.
Leslie Esther Easterbrook as Mother Firefly.
Yeah, and didn't have a huge part. But of course, Sid Haig is back.
William.
Brother is back.
Oh, William Forsythe. Sheriff Wydell.
He's great in this.
Oh my God, I can't stand William Forsythe in anything.
Why?
I'm just not a fan.
What's wrong with him? He's a good actor.
He does that. Like everything that he says is so cool, and I'm just gonna stare off into space afterwards, so you can sit there and let it absorb into you.
That's because he is cool. I like him.
I like William Forsythe.
Yeah.
But the problem with both this one and the third one is that we're supposed to really care about these characters, but they're so heinous, these people, that I don't care about them. Like, who are you rooting for? Assaulting this couple or two pair of couples in a hotel room and making one of the women like strip and humiliating her and everything. But we're supposed to like root for them against the cops.
I'm glad you said that. I have a note that says, I don't like anyone in this movie. I hope they all die.
See, and I'm the opposite, because this is why I really, really like this film. It's because I started to, I mean, I love, what I love about this movie is it made me start caring for the killers. These dysfunctional, homicidal.
How did it?
I don't know why. I didn't start caring for them, I think, until they got captured. I think it's when they were at that pimp's hotel, and it was a weird montage scene, a little dancing and whatnot. But I started to actually get involved with the characters, because this is actually, no matter how horrible these people are, I started really seeing them gel as a family, I guess, you know, throughout these two films. And so when they got captured by William Forsythe, and I thought it was shot kind of well, where, you know, they're, these families, no matter how horrible these people are, they are actually like caring for, you know, their loved ones. And it got me. It hooked me. And I'm just like, I was like, holy shit, I'm rooting for these people, even though I hated what they were doing in the first film and the second to these people. It just baffled my mind. I was like, you know what? Good on you, Robbie Zombie. I mean, it was just, he did it. He did, I think, what, to me, what he wanted the whole entire audience to do. And it obviously it didn't do it for you guys, but it did it for me. And I was like, I kind of like applaud him
for
that.
Well, Charlie Manson had a really tight-knit family too, but I'm not a big fan.
But that's why I like the Devil's Rejects so much. I was like, I was very fascinated that Rob Zombie actually made me start rooting for them. And I think that's kind of a hard task after the heinous crimes and things they've done to everyone. And that one scene in The Devil's Rejects where he cuts off that woman's boyfriend's face and puts it on her, and then they let her go, and she's like just running horribly. She's like running, and then she gets hit by the semi. That was just horrific. I thought that was a very well shot scene. Yeah, I liked
that. Speaking of the pimp and the brothel that they go escape to, I was thrilled to see Elizabeth Daly as Candy. She was like the top earner. She was Dottie in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
I'll never watch it.
That face looks familiar. I gotta look this up, and I'm like, oh my god, that's Dottie. I will say that I like the soundtrack to this movie, but not the score, but the soundtrack itself. It's like he actually played.
Yeah.
And I was, of course, as anal retentive as I am, every single song that came on, the very first thing I'm doing is making sure it came out before 1977, and they all did. Wow. I just thought it was a little too on the nose that the last song that they had was freaking Freebird.
Oh. Yeah, I hate that.
I liked anthem. It. I mean, I'm not a fan of the film, but the song, but I mean, I kind of liked it.
It went on forever, like the Freebird.
The extended remix.
Forever.
I didn't mind it. I didn't think it went that long.
Just die already.
It was the entire song. It was the entire song.
Was it an entire song?
Yes. Yeah.
I must have been enjoying this film. I didn't care. I just did not care.
Oh, well, I'm glad you didn't, because I'm glad that we're not all three just bagging on this, because I know a lot of people love Rob Zombie, so I don't want to turn off fans and stuff, but it just doesn't.
Oh, big shout out to Bill Moseley. I really started getting involved with Otis. I think Otis is actually it was much better developed character than in the first film. I started really liking him. Just watching him, I don't know.
I will say this: I do like me some Danny Trejo.
Yeah,
Danny. Yeah,
I mean, he's just good in everything, and he's got what a range.
Yeah,
like I barely knew it was him.
Yeah,
he never plays the same part twice.
Yeah, right.
He's great in Heat. Come on,
I like him in this.
One other person I want to point out was Priscilla Barnes.
Yes.
Who was Terry from Three's Company? She was in that one episode where there's a misunderstanding.
Yeah, of course. And of course she's the one who's being humiliated and made to strip and it's horrifying. Or not horrifying, I get an icky feeling.
That's the exact word I was gonna say, icky.
Just icky. And it wouldn't be so bad if there was like some sort of catharsis later, but then we're supposed to like these characters. It just doesn't work for me. I don't see how
did for me.
These are likable people at all. And especially after what they did, and there's no, I get that he's consistent and he's sticking with them and they are just killers, but how am I supposed to root for them? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how Zombie did it. It made me start liking him. But I mean, one thing I didn't like about it was that I finally saw Terry's boobs, because I always thought she was the hottest out of Three's Company, and it was just such a letdown that she was being tortured, and that's finally how I got to see her boobs.
Yeah. Well.
So.
And then we come to, basically, he decides to, after doing a couple other movies, including Halloween and some others, he decides to come back to this series and does really basically the exact same movie as part two. And that is Three from Hell, which is basically the exact same movie as part two. He just dressed it up a little bit. All the way down to the scene where they go into they don't have Captain Spaulding, of course, because he's in it briefly at the beginning, but Sid Haig was obviously very sick. In fact, I think this is around the time that I saw him at a horror convention, and he didn't look good at the horror convention, but I saw him before this, I think. But anyway, this came out in what, 2017 maybe?
2019.
2019.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I saw him in like 2018, and he looked better than he did in this movie, but I think he was pretty sick.
He was
sick.
Skinny. He lost.
So it was kind of sad to see, yeah. but they replace him with a half brother, I think, played by, I can't remember the name of the actor now, and so he takes this part of the three from hell. And of course it's also got the brother, and it's got Baby Firefly as well, played again by Rob Zombie's wife. And but it's the exact same story. I mean, they go to the house of the prison warden once they escape. They go to the house of the prison warden, and it's basically the same scene as the hotel room in Devil's Rejects. They're basically harassing and humiliating this family, and you know,
a clown
raping.
Shows up.
Yeah, that, a clown shows up.
Like Clint Howard.
Yeah, yeah, it made
Clint Howard. I was like, why did a clown just show up? Clint Howard dressed as a clown just show up.
Yeah.
I don't even understand that.
You know, and they harass these people, rape them and everything. And then they escape and they leave and they go to Mexico, where they go to a club. They're just basically the same. I mean, it's another, like, you know, strip joint or brothel, just like the one that they went to in Devil's Rejects. I mean, it's the same story. Instead of cops coming after them for the big shootout, it's a drug lord coming after him, who's happens to be Danny Trejo's brother, right? I think brother or son.
Son, I think.
Son. One of the two. And yeah. And so he's a drug kingpin, and he is going to exact revenge. So it's really the exact same plot as Devil's Rejects. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like this film.
By the way, it's Richard Brake, Brake, who's Winslow Foxworth. You know, I can't remember his nickname. The guy that took over for Sid Haig.
Oh,
the
Wolf.
The Wolf.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wolf.
Yeah.
And refresh my memory, what part did Dee Wallace play in this? She was Greta?
Oh, she was the prison guard.
Okay.
She was the lesbian prison guard who had a crush on Baby.
Mm. Yeah, memorable performance.
This film.
By the way, I kept in my notes, I kept referring to the character of Otis as Hillbilly Gandalf, because his hair was just so long.
He looks more like Saruman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but it's basically the same thing, and there wasn't much for me to say about it. Did you guys have anything more to say about that one? It's very similar to the previous one, but probably good news for fans. But yeah,
Bow and Arrow, Joe. What did you think of?
Oh yeah, there's a bow and arrow
with the bow. How was her form?
I didn't have any problem with it.
Nice.
Ooh.
Speaking of which, nice. I was rewatching Never Hike Alone I can't remember now if it was Never Hike Alone or Never Hike Alone in
Never
the
Hike
Snow.
Never Hike Alone in the Snow.
Where Jason actually picks up a bow and arrow. Yeah, it is the second one. It's in the snow. Yeah. And because it goes right through that kid's leg.
Right.
Jason had some good form on that one. I will tell you that.
Nice. Jason. That would be, and of course, that's Vince.
Yeah, so when we talk to him next, I'll have to compliment him on his form. So, and that's...
Well, he learned it from the camp.
Well, sure, yeah. Oh, that's all they do at camp is just bow and arrow. Yeah. So, and that is archery talk.
That's funny.
Yeah, every time I see a movie with someone with a crossbow or a bow and arrow, I think of Joe's...
Crossbows are cheating.
Joe's going to...
Joe's not a fan of crossbows.
Cheating.
You're just pulling a trigger. There's no, it's.
You still got to bring it back.
I know, it's so unromantic. Anyway, by the way, Sid Haig died 5 days after this movie was released theatrically.
That's too bad. Shout out to Sid Haig.
Yeah, friend of the show, Sid Haig.
Friend of the show, Sid Haig. So then comes, I believe, the next thing, because we just did the trilogy. So the next thing after, I think, Devil's Rejects that he did was a little thing called 31.
Actually, Lords of Salem was 2012. 31 was 2016. But I agree. Let's talk about 31 first so we can end on a high note.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So 31, I didn't mind 31. It's not great, but it's basically a very similar setup to House of a Thousand Corpses. There's a group of people riding in a van with some horrible dialogue, just telling each other to F off all the time and telling dirty jokes that just are not really even jokes. And then they get captured by some people that put them, I guess, in like a warehouse, and there's some kind of game. Maybe somebody else could explain it better, but there's some kind of game going on where people watch them see if they can survive.
It's right? Like The Running Man.
Yeah,
kind of
like
Schwarzenegger's. It's kind of like The Running Man.
Or what's that show that we watched last fall on Netflix? The
Korean one?
Squid Games.
Squid Games. Yeah, it's a little bit like that, only more horror.
Five carnival workers are kidnapped and held hostage in an abandoned hellish compound where they are forced to participate in a violent game, the goal of which is to survive 12 hours against a gang of sadistic clowns. And I got to say, it is the favorite movie I have that has a Mexican Nazi midget Hitler in it. I mean, if you're looking for...
Is it the same?
Three
From Hell?
Same actor.
Oh, okay.
But, you know...
Oh, it is?
Yeah,
oh,
if you're looking for a Mexican Nazi midget Hitler, you got to watch 31. Because, honestly, I don't know how he came up with that one. But, you know, no joking. My hat's off. That was clever. Yeah. I did not see that coming. Get that? I did not see that coming.
Oh, I got it. Yeah.
Oh, Joe. It's basically like a video game, though, right? And each of these guys that they have to kill is like a boss, and they get more difficult as they go. But it's not just a gang of clowns. There's really only a couple clowns in it.
No, dude, there was like one midget Nazi clown, and then they had brothers. Yeah, but he had a white face.
I think they were all supposed to be carnivalistic, some sort of clowns.
Yeah, you had the two brothers with the chainsaws.
I watched this during Joe's clown episode that we did last summer, so I talked about it then. Yeah.
Richard Brake played Doomhead. The midget. Yeah. Little person was Sickhead. There was also Psychohead. Elizabeth Daly, of course, Dottie returned as Sexhead. There's Schizohead. I don't know where he comes up with these names, but you know, good for him with the nomenclature.
Yeah, it seems like Rob Zombie likes whatever he watched as a child. It's like if he can get that actor, I feel like he brings these people in just to work with them and probably just to have. campfire stories during production and just hang out. And he's just, I feel like Rob Zombie was just like living his dream with these movies. Like all these characters that he grew up loving, got, you know, and they're not, you know, famous people, but it's people I think he adored when he was younger. And he was just living the dream and bringing them all together and, you know, just having a party each film. I feel like that's what he brought Dottie in, and like Dee Wallace, and because Dee Wallace was in a lot of his films, and you know, Sieg Haig, you know, I know what he was a fan of like earlier on. So I just think, you know, Rob Zombie's just having a good old time, and people are like seeing these movies, and so I mean that's what he's doing, and I, you know, but I mean 31 I enjoyed way more than Three from Hell. Oh, I have to say, I liked Devil's Rejects so much that I was at FYE just looking through the horror selection, and I saw Three from Hell, and without even seeing the film, I bought it.
For $25?
I bought, yeah, it's 4K Ultra HD. It was a impulse buy. I'm so disappointed I bought this damn film. Oh. I'm just going to return it. I mean, but I did watch, but I also bought it because, you know, it was a hard copy and I could listen to the director's commentary,
is
right?
Is that unopened?
No. I opened it.
Oh, okay. So you watched it on that.
Huh? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so I listened to the audio commentary. Rob Zombie's commentary, he sounds so bored when he's, you know, talking about these movies. And he's just like, I don't know if he was just smoking a doobie or something. He's like, yeah, so this was filmed, the prison scene where the Manson girls, you know, were held. And I don't know. I made a bet.
I never really thought of him much as like a chatty Cathy anyway, but.
Yeah. All right. But I thought, you know, then there is a part in 31 where one of the characters does like a slow clap, you know, and I think it was the main bad guy or whatever does like a slow clap, and I was like, oh my god.
I don't want to spoil anything, but I was not thrilled with either of the two endings. The end of the game, the end of what happens at the end of the 12 hours, and then how the movie ends.
Oh,
yeah. Where he's just, well, she's walking down the highway, and he's, you know, just gets, you know, pulls up in the car, gets out.
Again, slowly walks, I stated, you know, I didn't want to spoil anything for anybody.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah, let me spoil
I'll do it for
now.
You.
Sorry.
And then we come to Lords of Salem, which I really liked. I thought it was a very good movie. I gave it 4 cuts, even.
Oh, wow, 4.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was great.
It was the one I certainly liked the best out of all of them.
Yeah.
It was my second favorite.
I thought Sherry Moon Zombie was fantastic in it. I thought it was a good score or a good good story. I liked the visuals. It was definitely a more visual story than most of his. It seemed better edited. There was some really interesting imagery. I really enjoyed the ending a lot. I loved that he went total psychedelic, crazy, hell out of your mind sequence at the end there. I loved the ending. I know Joe didn't care for it, but it was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah, I'm just confused and filled with thousands of questions in that last 10 minutes.
I love a movie that does that.
I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this. I can appreciate what he did. It's sort of a, you know, middle finger to the audience. Like, I don't have to wrap this up in a neat little bow like every other Hollywood movie does. Yeah. I can just freak the daylights out of you. And he does. He accomplishes that for 10 minutes.
He did.
It does wrap up.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah.
But
kind of in a cheap way, because it had like
a newscaster or
a TV reporter saying
right.
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
He wrapped it up in a really cheap bow. And
a little bit. Yeah.
I would have preferred it not to.
I really think that some of the character design, like the guys with the gray faces, the eyes all, I really like that. And honestly, what that reminded me of is Last Night in Soho. The character design that they did for the ghosts that were coming back in that one, the Edgar Wright film.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah, no, and I liked the witches. I thought they were really
good.
Oh,
they were great.
They were fantastic. And I think all of them had been in some horror movies in the past.
They all had, yeah. And wow, actually,
the main one,
really
the main,
decent actresses.
Oh, yeah. And the main evil one.
It was nice.
The main evil one, she was in They Live and a lot of – they were all
Meg Foster.
Stuff. Meg Foster, right. And, yeah, she was in They Live and she was in a bunch of other stuff. But I thought the cast was good. I thought Sherry Moon Zombie was the best she's ever been.
Yep.
And I thought it was a cool concept. There were some really I got the creeps a couple times even when she would walk by a room and there would be this thing in the room and she wouldn't see it, but
yeah,
it was just kind of lingering there. There were a couple shots like that I thought this was definitely his most serious movie, and I thought overall his best. Now, I think there's two schools with him, and I think that the people who love House of Thousand Corpses and, you know, those movies, Lords of Salem is probably their least favorite. And people who aren't big Rob Zombie fans love Lords of Salem more than maybe some of the others. I not 100% across the board, but I think there's a tendency there.
Other than the Sherry Moon Zombie, I wish they had earlier sort of established that she had earlier in, like, prior to the movie, earlier in her history, had struggled with addiction, because it sort of came out of left field when she was struggling with it in the film. I wish they'd set that up, but I will agree, this is by far the most likable she is out of any of those movies, and it is a very interesting character. And I also kind of, well, he did a decent job too, creating a relationship, a dynamic with her two co-hosts, one more so than the other. But it was.
Well, the dialogue is so much better.
Yeah, because there's like half the F words in it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but it just isn't, you know, it's there's something to it. There's more
there's
depth.
There's substance to this movie. It was.
Yeah, there's substance to it. Yeah.
And there's a calmness to this film than the other Rob Zombie films. It's just more relaxed. It's more just slow pace. He takes his time.
It's a more confident movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's like he's learning. It's like I think maybe Rob Zombie actually got tired of making, you know, the Firefly films and whatnot. He's going, I just want to go a different direction. And this is what he did. And he does a really good job. Some of these shots in the auditorium and her walking into room number 5 with the stairs, the red stairs going up.
Church.
They're gorgeous shots.
It reminded me a bit of like Suspiria, you know, there was a
Eyes
little,
Wide Shut.
I don't know if I'd say Giallo. Eyes Wide,
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a Rosemary. I could see some Rosemary's Baby in this as well. And little Polanski, I feel like he was showing some more of it. And then there was also a lot of references to an old silent film. I can't remember the name of it. It was A Trip to the Moon or something.
Oh, yeah,
like
the wallpaper
and,
that she had behind her bed.
That moon
with the rocket ship in its eyeball.
In its eye. Yeah, that's from
it was like one of the first films ever made.
Yeah, one
I
of
think.
The first. Yeah, and so. There was just some really cool imagery in this that an abstract kind of, you know.
And there's hardly any kills in this. It's
right.
just basically Bruce Davidson getting hit with a pan. It was great.
She even, speaking of that poster of the moon with the rocket in its eye, there was some really interesting artwork that I'm guessing was created for this, but there was one. It was like four or five robots, like a silk screen print that were just repeated that looked really, really cool. Like, oh, I'd put that in my house. I like that.
Yeah.
It's like he had an attention to detail that wasn't just throwing, you know, dirty clothes all over the floor and an unkept kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought it was really good. I loved this movie. Yeah. I don't know if I'd say I love it, but I really, really liked it. So. Anything else?
So what do you think your favorites are?
Lords of Salem.
Lords of Salem?
What's your order?
My order is, I'm going to go Devil's Rejects. No. No, because Lords of Salem was so freaking different. I'm going to go Lords of Salem, Devil's Rejects, House of Thousand Corpses, 31, then 3 from Hell.
Joe?
Lords of Salem would be first. And then I'd say House of a Thousand Corpses. And then I'd say 31. And then the other two, I don't, you know, they're interchangeable.
Yeah, I would say probably the same. I would say Lords of Salem, Thousand Corpses, 31, Devil's Rejects, then 3 from Hell. Yeah.
Do you guys want to know Brian's?
Sure.
Yes.
So his favorite is Devil's Rejects, Lords of Salem, House of Thousand Corpses, 31, and 3 from Hell.
Yeah.
And his favorite horror film of all time would be Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh. Okay.
That's his favorite.
I like that. That's a good one.
And he says his most favorite horror movie would be Hereditary.
Oh, his favorite horror movie?
Recent horror film.
Oh, recent. Okay.
Recent
Hereditary.
That's a classic. Then I'm sure Brian has already listened to our Hereditary episode. But for those of you that skipped it or were not aware of it, Matt and I, while Mark was on vacation, did a pretty deep dive in Hereditary and loved that film.
Yeah. Really good episode.
It's a good
guys.
One. Yeah. Well, I guess
except
that...
your review on Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh yeah, that was great. I guess that wraps it up for Rob Zombie this week. And Joe is the next person to have a pick. So Joe, tell us what movie or what genre or series or whatever it is you've chosen, and maybe fill in the audience what movies they can.
I know Matt Mark is waiting with bated breath because he has no idea. So here it is, and that's the drum roll. So what I'm picking for next episode is workplace horror. Workplace horror that takes place in the workplace.
Workplace horror. So tell us movies example. Mark is puzzling right now.
I have actually handpicked 6 movies, and I'm going to give you the titles, and I'm going to give you the years they came out and the streaming services that they're available on, so we don't have another revenge issue with Mark watching the wrong film. So,
oh, I watched Revenge. That was very good. I love it.
All right. Welcome aboard.
Excellent.
So the first film is called Compliance. It's from 2012. It's on Prime and Hulu and Tubi. The next one, one of my all-time personal favorites, The Belko Experiment from 2016.
Hell yes.
You can find that on Prime or Pluto TV. There's another one called Mayhem that came out in 2017. I believe that is on Prime and Shudder. And that stars the gentleman that played Glenn from The Walking Dead.
Oh, okay.
Of course, the next one, a big-time favorite, Cabin in the Woods from 2011, which is available on Amazon Prime.
Oh,
that is workplace horror.
That is workplace horror.
There's another one called Intruder from 1989, which I have not seen at all. And I just reading the synopsis of it, I was very intrigued. And then the last one is called Bloodsucking Bastards from 2015. That's on Prime, Tubi, and that's it, Prime and Tubi.
Intruder, what is that on?
Intruder is on Prime, Shudder, and Tubi.
Nice.
So those of you that want to follow along at home, there are 6 movies that we are going to be watching within the next 2 weeks and do another podcast about.
Yep. So that is our theme, workplace horror, Joe's pick. And again, please, now that everything's fixed on our website, I feel bad because we've been telling people to go to our website and buy stuff to support the show, and it hasn't been working all this time, so I feel horrible about that. So, but it does work
now. Our audience members, if there's something else we tell you to do that is not working, please let us know, and we'll fix
know.
It.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we only knew because friend of the show Brian decided to let us know. But
thanks
please,
to Brian.
Yeah. But please go to www.cinescarehorror.com and look for our merchandise, and we have a bunch of stuff on there. Hopefully we're going to add stuff before too long. And also, be on the lookout for, go onto YouTube and find Never Hike Alone and Never Hike Alone in the Snow. Those are two movies that we are doing the sequel to, Never Hike Alone 2, and we are so proud of CineScare producing, being one of the producers of this movie, and we're very excited. It's going to be awesome. But
it's
going to
be really
this.
Cool.
It is going to be really cool. So
I might wear my kimono to the premiere.
Oh, Joe. I wonder where the premiere is going to be.
It's going to be in the comfort of my own home, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's it. So we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Madame, we're about to close. Would you like a refill? Ha 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 ha! Finally, how I got to see her boobs.